the federal protection of abortions under the Supreme Court decision of Roe versus Wade. It took about 20 years after that before we started seeing a drop in violent crime. But when it did happen, it was dramatic. And the entire 90s were that drop in crime. It's 2 o'clock in the morning right here on the 90.1 FM KKFI Kansas City, which is Kansas City Community Radio. It's very interesting. Are those two things connected? I mean, I you could argue yes. And will we see in 20 years, because Texas has just made it very difficult to get abortions. I mean, it's a lot easier for, because you have to, if you are going to be an abortion clinic, you have to have admitting rights at a hospital that is, or you need to have a surgical standard at your clinic, which, you know, prices a lot of those abortion clinics out of being able to operate anymore. So they started to close down. And there are just 3 or 4 abortion clinics still left operating in the state of Texas. Will we see a spike in, you know, in violence and crime in Texas in 20 years? I mean, oh, sure. Sure we will. I mean, I think you could make a solid argument that it's not necessarily just the increased militarization and spending, because law enforcement is generally there after the fact. It'd be nice to think that law enforcement prevents crimes, but they really don't. They respond to them. A lot more criminal response than reaction. Let's go to the phones. 816-931-5534. 931-KKFI, you're on the radio.
Oh, this is Russ checking in from downtown.
Good morning, Russ.
You know, I'm gonna have to challenge you on your last statement there. I don't really think the crime was higher in the 70s than it is now.
Statistically, I'm not pulling that out of my bootay. I'm saying that is FBI, Department of Justice statistics. So statistically, in the 70s, crime was much higher than it is today.
I'm still not buying it. I'll tell you why. Because I've read stories over the last few years showing that in a lot of places, especially places that are magnets for tourists, that the police departments have written down, or, you know, they've written down the severity of crimes to make it look like this look like the area is less, you know, criminally inclined than it really is.
Yeah.
I mean, in the 70s, you know, you'd have to Google it, but I'm going to go out on a limb and say in the 70s there were 50 million less people here.
Oh, sure, yeah. No, right.
No, I'm just, you know, it's so easy to cook the statistics. I mean, look at the hate crime statistics. If you actually look at the hate crime statistics, Hispanics have caused no hate crimes. They roll the government rolls the Hispanic population into the white population.
Sure.
Well, I mean, that's, you know, it's odd. It just seems kind of odd that they do that. I'm just saying that I don't trust some of these statistics that the government puts out. And it's kind of surprising that you do, since you believe in the 9/11 conspiracy.
What do you mean?
Well, no, I'm just saying why, you know, on the one hand, you don't trust the government on what happened on 9/11, but you trust the government on the crime statistics.
I mean, I think the 9/11 Commission report and the Department of Justice putting forth information on criminal statistics are two different things, right?
Well, it's from the government agencies.
And my point here is this, is that I couldn't tell you that crime has definitively decreased since then, but the FBI says that, and everyone else says that as well.
Well, the FBI also is heavily involved in walking somebody through the steps of being a homegrown terrorist.
Well, right, and there's no doubt that the FBI spends a lot of time creating honey traps for that, but there has to be two realities there. I mean, the FBI can't just be an organization that is there to manipulate and create terror plots so they can then pat themselves on the back, or they can't just be there to destroy, you know, witnesses for the defense when it comes to the prosecution of terror cases. There has to be, the FBI has to do something good too, right? I mean, sure, the government's got a lot of bad actors involved, but it's not all just pure evil, Russ, right? I mean, I don't know, you know, the September 11th conspiracy is much bigger than just the federal government. It's much big. It was much bigger than the Bush administration, and much bigger than, you know, his cabinet, et cetera.
I'll give you one other example that, you know, the recent reports have come out about disparities in
hold on. Oh, I saw the report too. But what you are all of a sudden, are we back on the Al-Qaeda bandwagon? I mean, it was it was 19 hijackers from Saudi Arabia and Egypt that, you know, brought the, you know, trillion-dollar military-industrial complex of the United States of America on its knees four times in one day. Is that, are we back on that bandwagon? Is that what's going on?
Well, I've always said that, in my opinion, that yes, there were people, whatever, from other, you know, that I you know, there's other people from other agencies. Let's put it that way. Other countries that probably had an inkling of what something was up. Why they didn't do anything? That's the other question.
I mean, Edward Snowden was interviewed recently via robot for a TED talk, and he said that in the intelligence community, terrorism is always a cover for action. And I mean, isn't that not just the case? I mean, terrorism is the use of violence to affect a political, you know, end. To, you know, it's a means for a political end. Violent means for a political end. I mean, and that plays out all the time. Terrorism never benefits the terrorists because it never gives them what they want. It just gives the government more power. If you look at who ultimately benefits from all terrorism, it's the government.
Well, the ANC rose to power on terrorism. So did the Bolsheviks.
Didn't they become the government?
Well, exactly. So they did. You could say the Nazis rose to power on terrorism, so it did benefit. It did benefit the terrorists in that sense,
which this just in turn became the government.
Well, exactly.
And I mean, let's remember. Let's also understand that, you know, the Nazis came to power in Germany because very powerful German interests wanted them to come to power. You know, the government of South Africa read the writing on the wall in regards to apartheid, right? I mean, they had to, I mean, that had to happen. And I think by the time the ANC did take over South Africa, I mean, it was a far cry from, you know, what Nelson Mandela was doing in the 60s. No? I mean, terrorism, the way we understand it in a postmodern sense, where we are today, a post-postmodern sense, I mean, it's simply that. I mean, it's for the purpose of increasing governmental power and affecting popular opinion, which I think is what it's been about since the beginning.
Well, you know, I want to step back on what I started to introduce earlier about the disparities in disciplinary action against students in school. And, you know, all the articles say that black students are disproportionately kicked out as opposed to white students, but they never mention Asian students. And in actuality, white students are kicked out disproportionately more than Asian students. But somehow, that doesn't fit the government's narrative or whoever is pushing these narratives. So
Well, I mean, whenever we talk about education, the narrative is never includes the Asians, unless we're talking about the level of proficiency in math or something along those lines.
Well, Jesse Jackson was in Silicon Valley. Once again, berating Silicon Valley for not hiring more black and Hispanic, you know, bringing more into the high-tech industries.
Sure.
But then he leaves out that 30% of the software engineers in Silicon Valley are Asian. You know, somehow they don't count as a minority, which is really interesting. I mean, statistically, they are a minority in the United States.
Well, no, and the Asians fly under all the radar. I get that. I hear
well,
what you're saying.
Well, yeah, but I'm saying it's done politically. It's done to manipulate, you know, the public mind, just like the crime statistics
manipulated. So how are we manipulated then? What's the end result of that?
Well, to make it appear like the country's become safer.
Well,
to calm down the
right,
public.
But in regards to the Asians, though, Let's get to that, you know, in regard to the, I mean, I don't think that the FBI crime statistics, I mean, because if you watch the 24-hour news cycle, I mean, you know, if you were paying attention to what the mainstream media wants you to believe, you would think that America has gotten much more violent. You would think that there are much more school shootings and public shootings and all these other things going on. But this has been going on for generations now.
Well, I don't think you can add 50 million people in 50 years from so many divergent cultures without any more conflict.
Well, okay, you can take that perspective if you want, but there is so much elbow room in this country that I don't really think. I mean, we could add another 300 million people to this country, and I mean, we could, if it was done in some way where we were thinking about it and it didn't just metastasize like a tumor, and we were to, you know, build into what all the land we have now, we could absorb that. That could happen. There's enough. There's a lot of room here in the United States. I don't think it's an issue of overpopulation. This ain't Puerto Rico.
Well, you know, I'm just saying that I've read too many articles about, you know, certain areas that are, you know, attract tourists.
But let's go back to the Asian thing. So the agenda that the establishment has to make white people feel guilty and let Asians fly under the radar. Right?
It seems to be that way, because in all these reports, they don't, you know, the people making the report, they don't point out that white students get kicked out more than Asian students.
But you realize that the narrative there is based upon the idea that you had in America 50, 60 years ago, you had inner city public schools that were, you know, white, and you had, you know, schools that were black, and the schools that were white performed well, the schools that were black did not perform well, and ever since then, they've been trying to figure out how to fix that. And so the neighborhoods changed, the white people moved to the suburbs, so did the quality of the schools, and the disparities continue. I'm trying to figure out and understand what those disparities, how those disparities are created, and how they could be remedied by the government, which is, I would say, impossible. It would seem to be impossible.
The government has spent trillions of dollars to try to remedy that.
Right, and it has not worked. And it continues to not work. You know, so is there a story there? Yes. Is there something that needs to be fixed? Of course. It's been addressed. We keep discussing it. How to move forward, I don't know. I understand that it makes guys like you feel some guilt or something. I'm not exactly sure. You know,
Russ has guilt. Russ, good morning.
Oh, hey there, Michael. No, I don't have any guilt.
No, yes, no, you do.
I'm just pointing out the hypocrisy of the system.
But you're fascinated with this. You know?
Well, I'm pointing out the hypocrisy of the system.
The hypocrisy because...
Well, for example, I'll give you one more quick example before I go.
Because the Asians get a fly under the radar.
Well, no, I'll give you one more quick example. I mean, like the gay agenda in this country, where they talk about it's all about equality, and, you know, equal protection of the law. And yet the very same people support affirmative action programs which violate the Equal Protection Clause under the law.
No, mercy.
Are we back to this thing?
How can you say that gay people just blanketly support affirmative action?
Well, I think most of them do.
Where does... That's like saying black people uniformly support, you know, whatever. You know, all black people support affirmative action.
I do think the black population disproportionately supports affirmative action programs.
Herman Cain doesn't.
Well, he's like in a minority of a minority of a minority.
Really? A triple minority? What's the third minority? Because he was the CEO of Godfathers?
So,
Russ, not a lot of those
you're
out there.
Back to the affirmative action thing?
I'm back to the hypocrisy of liberals in this country
that go on and on about equality. But the hypocrisy is being upset about things like affirmative action when clearly the way, I mean, what affirmative action is a response to, you would accept that there was government intervention in the way that black people were treated in this country, right? I mean, there were laws and there were...
I don't deny that, how does that translate into my Ukrainian wife?
Well, I don't know, because this is America, and it's how does it impact America, not an individual.
Well, she's living here now.
You realize,
right, but it's not about the individual that comes or even is born here. It's about the country and what the country had done, and that was the response that some people in this country, right? Like, I guess you would want to call them Democrats if that's what you wanted to do. It's, well, actually, it was Nixon that started a bunch of the affirmative action stuff, right?
Was it? I don't know. I do know this, though, that white women have benefited more from affirmative action than any other group. So your Ukrainian wife...
Well, that's the canard, you know.
Is it?
That may or may not be true.
Why is that?
Well, I'm just saying a lot of these statistics, one has to actually look these things up. Like the argument that women make 77 cents less, or make 77 cents to every, you know, dollar a man makes. Well, that's not really true either. But that's something the media puts out all the time. Like where I work here at the post office.
You work for the damn government, Russ. Of course it's different in the government.
Well,
the
no, it's not, because the women that have the same seniority I do, they make exactly the same money I do.
Right, because you work for the government.
There is no way to get
it. Because
no,
they
it's
are,
not a, that's not affirmative
are,
action.
They are not allowed to do those things.
Because he works for the day. You don't work in the private sector. You don't work for reality. It's not the market that you work for. You work for the post office.
Well, no, what I'm just saying, though, that's a statistic that the media likes putting out, and it's not true.
Truman said there are, you know, two types of statistics. There are lies and there are damned lies. I mean, I hear that. And I'm not trying to put all my faith in statistics here. I'm just saying that it's interesting, you know, in regards to FBI crime statistics in the early 90s have been going down. Rates of violent crimes and murders have been going down. The prison population has increased because of drug offenses, and most of them are nonviolent drug offenses. I mean, that's what we're told, you know? I mean, that's what's put out there. I mean, we can be skeptical of that. We can think about that. But I don't have... any other reason to dispute or doubt that?
Murder, how many people were killed in Kansas City last year?
Close to 100 and some change.
Well, you know, my wife was totally shocked when she came to the United States, watching the nightly news here in Kansas City.
Sure.
At all the murders that go on, all the shootings and so forth.
Right. Most people.
No, it just seems kind of, I'm just saying that it's easy to look this up online. You know, go to Google and type in, you know, crime statistics being manipulated to make some areas appear safer than they really are for tourists.
Well, cool. I mean, nobody's trying to make the east side of Kansas City seem safer for tourism.
I am sure that every place that has these kind of statistic-based or has statistic-based criteria or performance reviews and that have to report these statistics, I'm sure that there are those who would try to hide them a little bit. You know what I mean? That would try to,
but the broader,
to
I mean,
bring
but,
it down.
Right.
But overall, the broad, that's not going to. They're not going to. You can't hide a murder. You know what I mean?
I mean, it's pretty. I mean, I think everyone accepts that large cities have gotten safer.
Suburbs have gotten more dangerous.
But maybe so. Maybe so. But the reality is that Times Square, you know, New York, is not the same as it was in the 80s. Times Square has got, you know, Chicago's crime rate has gone down since the early 70s as far as murder rate has gone down. Even though Chicago, according
still
to Matt
having,
Drudge,
yeah.
is the, you know, most unsafe place to be in the whole world. I mean, it's gotten better. I mean, Kansas City.
Yeah, but in New York, they had the search and frisk or whatever it is.
But
that seems to have had an impact on that.
But Russ, it all
if
stopped
you accept
before
that. I mean,
but the search and frisk thing and all that stuff, mm-hmm. you know, that's going on in public transit and all these other places. You know, I don't know that is anything more than just racial profiling. I don't know that, you know, most of the people that get stopped and frisked aren't necessarily, you know, getting ready to commit murders, and that's not what's, you know, prevented there. I mean, I don't know. I mean, you know, I accept the fact that America has gotten less violent over the last, you know, generation or two. And I'm accepting that not based upon increased law enforcement or anything, but the absence of unwanted babies who weren't going to be raised by their parents to be good adults in the first place through
well,
the legalization
gonna
of abortion
mail,
through
so
Roe versus Wade. I think that makes a lot of sense. So we'll just go with that. Thank you, Russ. We appreciate your phone call as always. 816-931-5534. My goodness. Turn something down and talk to me.
All right. There we go.
All right.
All right. How are you this evening?
I'm absolutely
or this
wonderful.
Morning.
I'm absolutely wonderful in yourself.
Excellent. First of all, I'm enjoying the content of your show.
Oh, good.
Really appreciate it. I've been listening to it, and I really like how you start one of the callers, and they were kind of just going one way with the idea of government. Now, you know, I'm just an average person. Liked history, and thought, you know, it's a really good thing if you really look at history. So many streams of history, you can see threads that lead right to where we are. Same ideologies, same political stands, primarily the same states doing the same things. It talked about disparity in our country having to do with people of color. Now, I am a person of color, actually several colors, but I only get viewed by one. Not a problem with me. I'm grateful. And he talked about how the government could not do this alone. And, you know, nothing's perfect. The idea that I have a tendency to hear people say that the government, you know, and that's those catch words, the government. Never really looking at the idea that, you know, the government's kind of like the car we drive in. You know, it's not the car that ran off the road by itself or smashed into someone. It's the person driving it. And oftentimes that seems to get lost in the shuffle of discussion. Usually people are upset about things. They don't like certain rules, certain things going on in society. Changes, oh, that's the other thing. We don't like change, so there's a big problem. Now, I know I'm all over the place with this, but getting back to the point, the idea of disparity of treatment based on color in our country doesn't seem as though it's going to work its way out just by working it out. And the one thing that I do not see happening enough in this country is people who sit with that comfort, i.e., white Americans.
But we're saying that the government can't just legislate that everyone should be equal and everyone, the disparity should leave, that the people need to decide that these things need to go as well. Is that what you're saying?
No. I'm not saying that at all, because the government does play a role. But when I talked about how people always say the government, they forget that it's the people that they vote on, that they put in office. You know, they'll stand in front of them every 2 years or 4 years or whatever it takes, and they'll say exactly what they want to hear. And that's how they get into office. And unfortunately, they get into office, and then they do whatever it is that they do. More times than not, you know, you get legislation that goes through all the things with the Homeland Security, all these big changes in security. They went over quick, done in a hurry. Not a problem. People didn't like it. People whined and moaned about it. But nonetheless, nobody fought it. Not really.
Well,
and
it didn't get
was.
Fought because people were terrorized into thinking that that was the only way to keep us safe.
And this is true. And you had people who complained about it, but that was about it. But when you look at the idea
it's similar to the way the war on drugs was used to increase prison populations by creating fear of the inner city and consequently, you know, black people living in the inner city in the 80s, you know, which created the situation we have to now where the incarceration rates in the United States are higher than anywhere else in the world.
Right. And I agree with that. I really do. And I understand it because, you know, I'm a man of color. And so I lived in these environments, you know, and I've traveled through these environments, and I've seen how things are. It's almost like the idea that, remember how people were when Rodney King was beat, how a great portion of our population didn't realize that this went on, you know. But for some of us, this was a norm.
Sure.
And the idea is this. Now, I read something the other day, and it talked about hate. The person that's hating, if they take away the idea of hate, then they have to look at themselves. When they look at themselves, they're going to find that they're not as important as they thought they were. They don't sit on this higher plane as they think they do, and their self-esteem decreases. And the idea, like, I'm around people who wear rebel flags, put it in the back of their pickup trucks, you know, what do you think of it? You know, the idea of saying a redneck, not even knowing what a true redneck is, but what they define it as, it's just associated with hate. It really has nothing to do with hate whatsoever. Not a true redneck. Not where it began. But that's like saying the word nigger. It's okay in hip-hop. I like hip-hop. But it's okay in hip-hop, but if you're a white guy or Asian or Hispanic, you can't go say this to a black person. It's ridiculous. But it's supposed to be the new thing.
Really, the Asians don't have, the slur loophole? The Asians can't use it?
I know, I don't know anybody.
Mike, help me on this.
First, personally, I don't know people. I'm not around people who
the Asians
going to
fly into the they fly under the radar and everything else. They can't drop the slur and get away with it. I mean, we know the white people and the Mexicans can. We know that for a fact.
According to Richard Pryor, that's how they were taught.
I got one bigger than that for you. Where I am, Caucasian young males use that, and the pants sag, and the hats are backwards. And they say that to each other. I was shocked and went, really? Y'all do that? Why? I wouldn't want nobody to call me that. And my best friends, I don't even say, that's my dog. Though if I said that plain, they'd understand. But I don't talk that way. So it's strange, this world we're in. And this society wants to be better than it is. But what I have seen, my own experience, is that people who are older and age are still holding on to this idea, and it's a refusal to let go that I am not greater than someone because of my color. I am not better than someone because of my color. Or I have the right to be somewhere as opposed to someone else who is not my color. And that's an idea. Until that starts to happen, it's not the government can do whatever it does, it'll still happen. You know, because it's so easy. You know, people say we're free to say what we want in the Second Amendment. But true freedom isn't about being able to say or do anything that is going to hurt someone else, because then you're taking away someone else's freedom. And that never gets discussed, you know. And we throw these words around, and we don't pay attention to the true meaning of them, of the essence of them. And there you go.
Well, no, I mean, some good points there made, my friend. We appreciate your phone call. You take care and have a good day.
Thank you. You too.
Bye-bye. All right, 27 minutes after the hour of 2. I'm Benjamin. This is the Paragon Radio Program. We'll be right back after this.
Hi, I'm Sim van der Rijn, author of Design for an Empathic World. Next time on New Dimensions, I'll be talking about how we can reconnect to people, nature, and to ourselves.
New Dimensions airs at 5 a.m. on Tuesdays.
Bear with me just a moment. Technology. Technologically advanced in this world that we live in. So I want to play this and we'll be back.
Star, presidency, man. majority, facing a stark presidency.
Thirty-two minutes after the hour of two, right here on Community Radio, in the 21st century, at 3 o'clock.
And strangely enough, I think it is 32 degrees.
Is it 32 degrees out there? It'll be. I mean, see, folks, it's springtime. It doesn't It's not automatically supposed to be 95 degrees.
I just want 60.
Yeah. Good luck on that. I mean, it's, you know, if the sun is shining and it's above freezing, it's really not that bad.
That's true.
I mean, I've realized that after we had a couple of highs of, you know, -3 or -4 or whatever this last wintry time.
That does hurt.
That's the way it's supposed. Spring is actually, it's supposed to be like this. We've been confused by the, you know, the changing climate patterns and all that. Of what it's supposed to actually be like, what spring is actually supposed to feel like.
And statistically speaking, I was off by 3 points, so it's 29 degrees outside.
29 degrees outside. Yeah, you know, statistics. Mm. You like to manipulate them. I mean, was that the real feel?
Right.
You know, was that with the wind chill? Was that associated in there? Well, it's springtime, you know, I mean, good, right? International Military Violence Day came and went, and I don't think there was any, you know, real brand new. There was the Crimea River situation.
Yeah, I was going to say, they stormed a few bases.
But, I mean, what did Obama do? Nothing. He didn't do anything to celebrate the holiday.
Oh, okay. I thought you were talking about the Ukrainian thing. I was like, what the hell is he supposed to do?
He's supposed to swing his thing, you know? Like,
he gave himself the presidential directive to impose sanctions all by his lonesome.
Sanctions on individuals too, which I thought was a little, I thought it was a little kind of, that's kind of bully, right? I mean, what, that was bullying, you know, like not sanctions on a country, but like,
well, I think the idea,
yo,
was,
Vlad, your friend, you know, Fyodor is going to get, you know,
well,
some,
I think
sanctions,
the idea was
him.
Like, we're going to personally go after Putin because he's the guy that's like driving all
really?
Of this, but
is he? I mean, the damn Crimeans had popular sovereignty. They voted 93% according to the statistics.
According to the guy, well, I mean,
no, that's what they. I mean,
all that
they don't. They
I don't
didn't
know,
take very
man.
Much
I mean,
time, though.
There was an army in the country before the vote to. The vote was.
Oh, you're saying it's like when Saddam Hussein used to get 97%.
Right. Or somewhere around
that. I don't think so.
Not like they were filling out the ballots for him or anything. And I'm not even saying that they didn't maybe even want to go, but it's, I don't know.
Kim Jong got reelected the other week.
Did he really? Man.
By Dennis Rodman?
I mean, I don't know. So you're Obama? Down with the whole the Russian Crimean situation?
No, it's not that. It's just Obama's a big fat pussy riot.
What's he supposed to do?
He's a big fat pussy riot.
That's my thing. It's like, you know,
he's supposed to freak out. He's supposed to send bombers over there.
Right. That just.
He's supposed to have a prayer meeting with Sarah Palin, you know, and talk about how we're going to react. Did you hear that Sarah Palin said that the Malaysian flight 370 may have flown to heaven?
No.
Has anyone seriously thought about that yet? I mean, we're to the point where that's a possibility.
It's the rapture. That's one plane at a time.
I was saying that we really need to get to the bottom of this and just ask David Copperfield what may have happened.
Like, how do you do that?
He disappeared the Statue of Liberty, but then put it back. So think about it. He might have some insight into
that. I was fascinated that because you kind of think we have this grid, and I'm sure the grid is tighter over actual populations, but they were looking for, you know, looking at satellite images and trying to find where this plane might be or the remains of a plane or whatever, and they were like, man, it looks like something about the size of what the remains of the plane might be. So they send planes all out there and they're swooping down, and it's just a guy on a boat making his way across this vast ocean.
No, the ocean is full of floating garbage.
Right.
Yeah.
But what I mean is that a boat of that size, which is it's a pretty big boat, but they didn't know what it was from that distance, you know, from just the satellite distance. So it struck me that they don't see every square inch like you kind of feel that they do. But again, it's out there in the middle of nowhere. And so talking about like how we kind of feel like, or I feel kind of like, you know.
You're being watched?
Yeah. Like the satellites can always zoom in on you anywhere, sure, everywhere. Yeah, but again, I realize, you know, why would they have that capability out on
you? You also live in a city and you track your, right. You are tracked by GPS. So.
Right. But this guy was on his boat traveling across the ocean and they didn't know that, you know, that.
And that's cool to you, right? That their guys get to travel across the ocean without people knowing? Is that where you're going with this?
Well, no. Actually, what I'm going with it is thinking that, you know, I'll give you a bunch of dots. And I'm still kind of where I was last week when we were talking off the air. And I totally don't have any kind of I don't have any more information than anybody else, right? But if you got a lot of money and a boat can travel across the ocean like that, are we still with this plane that the pilot had to have done something or someone?
A retired pilot, and I was asking him about it. I mean, he's like, you know, clearly the pilot did not want to land safely.
Right.
You only
or land where he was supposed to land.
There, I mean, the probability, I think you're probably, it's more likely the plane flew to heaven than flew to a
secret base
in Pakistan.
Not in Pakistan. I'm like a secret base on some, that was a pretty wide swath of arc where it could go.
Do you realize that a Boeing 777 to land in an airstrip, that airstrip would have to be in, you know, an 8,000 feet long runway. I mean, this is not. You can't just touch down on a deserted island. It needs to, you know, land on a really large strip.
But do you think that there could be an island of the size needed to do that?
You mean like an evil island?
Or like not necessarily an uncharted island, but just a deserted.
They were saying that the flight simulator that this guy had constructed in his apartment, which was elaborate and is
was
not
designed to crash.
No, that he had put in a couple of locations that had flight, you know, the airstrips in the Indian Ocean, but they weren't sure as to whether or not he could actually fly the plane and land them on these airstrips. And apparently it's not that abnormal for a guy to have a flight simulator if he's a pilot in his home. This guy had a very advanced flight simulator.
Now you said land on airstrips in the Indian Ocean.
Yeah. So, I mean, you what you just said, they opened up the possibility
they are
for
like,
it.
They have.
But the idea that you know, that if you had safely landed this plane and nobody's iPhone had pinged anything, that there was no communication whatsoever. I mean, Rolls-Royce, who is the manufacturer of the engines, puts transponders in their engines. I mean, there's the fact that there's no digital footprint. I mean, come on. Nobody's tweeted about seeing the damn plane. I mean, there's just it just disappeared. It flew to heaven.
Hello.
Good morning. You're on the radio.
Hey, this is Troy Jackson from North Kansas City. I think the missing plane is on Fantasy Island, and all 240-some-odd passengers are now living out their fantasies and dreams with Ricardo Montalban and the little bitty guy that always says, "Boss, deplane, deplane." That's where they are. No worries.
Yeah, he's not worried.
Of course, the
so on Fantasy
plot
Island,
line of Lost.
They don't have Facebook on Fantasy Island. Nobody's updated their profiles. I mean, this doesn't make sense.
Well, now, when you're on Fantasy Island, you're completely cut off from all, internet devices and things of that nature. Because it is, of course, Fantasy Island. You're there to get away.
Right. I mean, where would the... Would you get standard cell service out in the middle of on a desert island, even if they had done that?
I'm sorry, I didn't understand you, Michael T.
Oh, I was just going with the... Ben was asking about, you know, no one had tweeted or their phones hadn't pinged and all that. But I don't know, would they get that kind of service out
probably
there
not.
Where there's no towers or whatever repeaters that are required?
No, I don't think so. Unfortunately for us, I mean, you know, they'll eventually surface back. They'll come back to reality.
I mean, you might have a point there, Mike. I mean, people have a hard enough time getting Sprint service here in the metro. There might be an issue if you're in the middle of the Indian Ocean.
Hey, guys, I love you. I got to get back to work.
We know.
All right, you be easy, man.
So, I mean, maybe not. But I think the idea that the plane could just evade all radar and fly to some remote location is pretty... I'm going to go with Sarah Palin's idea that they may have flown to heaven. I'm going to put that ahead of the other thing. Or it's, you know, the plane is in the bottom of the ocean, which the guys from the Navy were saying that it's in the bottom of the ocean. Sayonara.
Right.
They're not going to find it. I mean, they would find it accidentally.
I think
the ocean is, it gets that deep.
Flew over the North Pole and got sucked into the inner Earth.
I think Pat Robertson thinks that, too.
But the fact that it took that turn, and then apparently no one knew where it went, you know, so you think that it immediately crashed? I mean, because if you're concerned that, or if you're saying that it would have been picked up or pinged by whether it's the engines or, you know, I know I've heard about all these transponders and things that are out there on these different parts of the plane and whatnot, and yeah, of course, I'm sure that folks had their phones and whatnot, but at the point that it turned off course, right, and then disappeared, if it didn't get picked up again, either it immediately crashed or it's possible that it could be somewhere and not be getting picked up, right?
Let's go back to the phones. Good morning. You're on the radio.
Hey, this is Reverend Doctor. How are you doing?
We're great, Reverend Doctor.
Reverend Doctor.
Hey, I think that it's the queers. The queers are doing it. They're in it with the Martians. They're building landing strips for gay aliens.
You mean Galians?
Galians.
No, Galians. Gay aliens are called Galians.
They're building landing strips right there in the middle of Iowa.
Sure.
You ever seen the soil in Iowa?
So
it's nothing. Can't grow nothing on it.
Reverend Doctor, how is the church dealing with the death of the patriarch Fred Phelps? How are you guys doing out there in Topeka?
The church is actually praising the death. Fred Phelps was beloved enemy and co-conspirator with the conspiracy. So Bob Dobbs and us, we've just been partying.
Ooh, Bob Dobbs. Hell yeah.
The death of the most evil man in America.
Reverend Doctor, the sub-genius. Well, put it in your pipe and smoke it, man.
Hey, thank you.
All right, take care.
May the plaque be with you.
Yeah, for sure. Look at that. A reference to the Church of the Sub-Genius here in the middle of the night.
Bob Dobbs.
Here on Reverend J.R. Bob Dobbs. Nobody?
Who'd that be?
He's the Reverend of the Church of the Sub-Genius. The old school stuff. It's going back, you know, to the 90s, man. All right, it's 15 minutes.
Is that a hip-hop thing?
I don't listen to hip-hop. It's 15 minutes until 3 o'clock, and we'll have a brand new suicide for you. 816-931-5534. Watch out for Galians out there.
And landing strips.
You know, which Galians, the Galians are not into landing strips, Jake, if you think about it.
If you think about it, you might be right.
It's a different. Well, I mean, I guess there might. Is there a landing strip equivalent in the gay community? Maybe within, you know,
a mustache.
The Italians. People have got something to work with. Not an ironic mustache either. Like a solid Selleck. You know, something bushy and dense. Nah, who cares? I mean, the plane's gone. It's never coming back. We're never.
That seems to be the consensus.
Yeah, it's gone.
That is just out.
And I think in all likelihood, somebody knows where it's at.
Wouldn't it be cool if it just, like, 2 weeks later, it just, like, lands in Beijing?
Full of something.
Yeah.
That's all I'm saying.
Everyone gets off, and they're just like, we're really hungry.
Like, in Contact, it pops out the South Pole, and they think they've been gone for, like, 18 minutes, and it was 18 days or whatever.
Right. Or, like...
No, not right. What are you talking about?
Like, Lost.
Have you seen Contact?
No, I have not.
Okay. It's a Stargate space travel movie with Jodie Foster.
Right.
Missed that one, yeah.
Okay, never mind then. The Earth could act like the portal she flew through.
Yeah, she got like a signal through SETI that explains to them how to build the
Stargate
contraption. Yeah, Stargate kind of deal. And then the aliens take her real quick. And she thinks she's there for quite a while. And yeah, like he says, 18 minutes.
I don't think that happened either, guys.
Well, like Lost, do you remember the popular TV show that the plane disappeared?
I don't like popular TV. But I don't watch popular TV.
Unpopular TV is Ben's favorite.
It's absolutely correct.
Musicals and, spaghetti western.
So, free day at the zoo, anyone? Nobody wants to talk about that?
Sure, the zebras do.
816-931-5534, free day at the zoo. How about Sylvester James, the mayor of Kansas City's response to the free day at the zoo?
What did he say?
Well, this is not a quote, but I'll try to sum it up. Get that damn camera out of my face. It's kind of, I think that from what I could tell was his response to the, you know, the investigation put on by the local media into what exactly did happen at the free day at the zoo. 816-931-5534. 931-KKFI, you're on the radio.
Or not. Might be another one of those.
Or not. Good job,
somebody
buddy.
Calling from the Malaysian flight.
What's he supposed to do? What's his response supposed to be?
Would you please get that damn camera out of my face?
Right. I mean,
is what he's supposed to say. He didn't actually say that. I'm just joking. He did get a little flippant, though. Because between the crowds on the plaza and, you know, the zoo, and I mean, people are saying that these are the same people. There's just a roving band of teenagers who have no direction or no activities, who are just going to various, you know, locations in the city to make middle class white people uncomfortable. Good morning, you're on the radio.
Hello.
Good morning, you're on the radio.
I am. I can hear the other radio playing, but I don't hear my voice.
Huh? You should turn
your radio. Okay, well, you guys got quite a conversation going on here.
Hell yeah.
somebody, you know,
you know why you can hear.
I haven't called your station for a long time, but whoever's on the radio, they kind of sound like Tommy Chong.
Yeah, man.
Is he talking about you or me?
I have no idea.
You.
I sound
this
like
a buddy of mine was talking about this not too long ago to me before about this legalization. And he says that in the state of Missouri, this is some things, because he keeps up on everything. This guy's a human search engine. There isn't nothing you can't get over on this guy. He would love to talk to you folks.
Well, sweet.
This guy was telling me that due to the unpredictability of the THC levels in people's blood, that now in biotechnological advancement, just because these people are driving on the highway and they're smoking their weed and they're having a great time, now the most controversial thing about the weed, besides the taxes and all this other stuff, and that
is
about how
weed?
They have come down on us for years about when we smoked it and about if or not you're going to get a job. And they were saying now that their big development is to develop a test that's going to cost hundreds and thousands of dollars, so that when you are driving and they do catch you looking like you've got the road mapped eyes, that they're going to want you to puff or in something, or they're going to want you to test somehow and find out when was the last time you actually did have weed, or if you had a contact high from stepping
right.
into a party and stepping back
yeah,
in the
it
door.
It stands to reason. He's
where
just
does all this non sequitur paranoia yeah. come from? I mean, seriously.
He just brought in that plane's not coming back.
Mike, the guy calls up saying that we sound like Tommy Chong and then immediately starts talking about smoking weed.
Well, that is true.
I don't think, you know, my friend, I don't think
he might be baked.
I don't think we sound
No, I'm not. I'm hearing an echo on the phone, and I thought this was like a chat line that you could call in and talk about whatever you've been talking about.
Yeah, no, it's KCTV's, it's Phone a Friend. This is KKFI's version of Phone a Friend.
I'm getting the echo in effect. So
all right,
I'm calling you from Bates City, from a long ways away.
Ah.
I don't know. It's your phone connection. We don't hear an echo on this end. But we appreciate the information in regards to your non sequitur paranoia, because they don't even have to develop anything. They already have it. They do a mouth swab, and they've already talked about that, because
they can do a time test or like
no,
how,
they can tell
how
if
recently.
No, they can see if there's weed in your system, if there is THC.
Is it the DNA test, the thing they're sticking there?
I don't know where, no.
Well, the question I have, because you're saying they have a test, but my question is it going to tell me that you just smoked some weed within the last 2 hours? Or,
right, exactly.
Because of course, there's tests that can give you 30 days.
Yes, Mike. The whole point is that it's a test.
Right, but that's why I'm asking, because you didn't say that.
It's a test.
That's what he was telling me, and he said that it's going to cost.
They already have one. It's for
$800,000.
Oh my God!
To develop it, and then thousands of dollars a year to maintain it. I mean, it's all about the politics and why more bad reasons than good reasons to not legalize it.
Okay. Well, there you go.
We shouldn't legalize it.
Well, we appreciate your
phone. But you know what? I believe that we should 100% legalize it. These people are a bunch of morons who don't think that we should legalize it. This has been an argument going on for 40 years now.
I think longer than that. It's been illegal for 80.
Right. Well, I don't know all the facts. Anyhow, I'll call back sometime when I got better phone reception.
Yeah, cool, man. I think we appreciate your phone
Thanks,
call, Bates
sir.
City. No, they absolutely have a roadside test that they can do. They can swab the inside of your mouth and see if there's THC in your system. See if you're currently high. Yes. Does law enforcement in Kansas City have it? I don't know.
Like, but
you should
my
be all
question
right.
to you is,
Mike, you
if
be
it's
all right.
in your system, because we've been doing drug tests for a long time. 12 years ago, when I was in Wichita, I hired people, and they could tell me that there was THC in their system,
right, Mike,
but it didn't tell me.
No. To see if people are currently under the influence of marijuana while driving a car.
So is there
the purpose,
alcohol?
I don't know.
I'm sorry to bother you with it. I'm just trying to ask some questions other than
saying,
a freaking
man,
plane that we don't know what happened to.
So they can give people DUIs for smoking right. weed. That's the whole point.
Okay, I'll look because it up myself and figure out what the hell, what the parameters are of it.
Not to see if you have weed in your system, you smoked it last week, but to see if you are high currently.
Right, and how do we determine that? If alcohol is the issue, right, we know that they can say, what's your alcohol blood content level? And that's going to reduce over time so they can see how much you had in you. To get to that point, you had to have so much within a recent time frame. You know what I'm saying?
And even those are inaccurate based on tolerance levels.
Well, right. And that's going to be generalized. But, I mean, I'm not against looking at people's blood alcohol content.
You're for drunk driving?
Apparently, it's within 12 hours of having smoked the weed. 12 hours.
See, I need a computer.
Yeah, no, it helps.
Fancy phones don't.
But it's ever since they legalized in Colorado, there's been all these stories about how you're going to have all these people who are really high driving around, right? And it's been made out to be a concern. And now people are going, oh my God, now that weed is legal, you're going to have more people high driving around. Is that true? And I don't care. They may have made some progress in the potency of marijuana since Woodstock or whatever. But I'm going to go with a bottle of Jack Daniels is going to
still be worse.
A stronger effect right. on your motor skills than a bunch of Hindu Kush or whatever. I'm going to go with the Jack Daniels is going to beat the weed every single time.
I would think so.
Yeah, I'm going to go with that too. Not really concerned about people doing 30, 40 miles below the speed limit, really high. I'm concerned about the guy doing 40 miles above the speed limit, extremely wasted. The guy Brett Farving around, driving, 100 miles an hour and sending, sex messages of his genitalia to, people. Because whenever I think of drinking a whole bottle of Jack Daniels, I immediately think of Brett Favre.
Was that his
I thought you were going to say penises.
Is that what you think of when you drink whiskey?
I don't drink whiskey for that very reason.
Okay, there you go. At least you know your tolerance and your limits and all that other stuff.
Man. Absolutely.
It's very important to know that. It's nice how at any time on this program, we can just go right into talking about weed and how it needs to be legalized.
And it's funny how it's callers that call up and bring that up.
Like, you sound like Tommy Chong, man, but we need to legalize it, bro.
Hey, man.
I think I figured out
that's where Tommy Chong, right?
Hey, man.
I figured out where the echo was coming from in his head.
Exactly. I mean, I think we
strange
all determined that.
Clouds.
Correct. Purple haze, baby. All in my brain. All right, 816-931-5534, 931-KKFI. Did you know that in Hawaii that it's legal for police to have sex with prostitutes?
Yeah, that's crazy.
Because it's all about investigating crimes.
Just like they can, it's like.
So can they like smoke?
Correct.
Drugs and do all and just investigate like
and lie to you in interrogation. It's kind of one of those subsets of.
It's interesting, isn't it?
It's crazy.
It's par for the course. Anybody surprised?
Did you know that Rush Limbaugh has a children's book and it's on the New York Times bestsellers list?
Yes.
And it just won a.
Not
an
don't
award?
Say a Caldecott or Newbery.
A Caldecott is for.
Children's books.
Yeah, it's for the pictures, though.
Well, it's got illustrations and it's Rush Limbaugh. Where'd
Rush
you think
Revere.
It's got? Yeah, he goes back in time to. It's kind of like
no, it was
Mr. Peabody.
The Children's Book Council and the Children and Teens Choice Book Awards. It did not win the Caldecott.
Okay. But, and the reason I asked, the reason I threw those two out, that one and the Newbery, is because those are like legitimate. or at least they didn't pop up in order to give him an award.
The Mark Twain Award, is he up for that one?
Has anyone noticed that Michael Savage, Rush Limbaugh, and Bill O'Reilly own the New York Times bestsellers list?
That's the scary part.
Is it?
They all do. They continually are up there when they come out with their crap. Pap.
Crap pap?
Did you see the state?
Pablum.
The state of New York suspended 8,900 driver's licenses for people who are in arrears on their state taxes.
Wow, really?
8,900 people got a letter in the mail saying
driving is a privilege, isn't it?
Apparently, in the Empire State.